This is the Incomparable Radio Zine on your community radio, KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM in Hood River and the Gorge, 104.3 in Philomath and Corvallis. It's about 11:10. Now we're going to hear from KBOO's very own Yana Maximova speaking with Will Potter, independent journalist, TED Fellow, and author of Green is the New Red, about ag gag, animal laws, and why industry compares his new project to Death Star. Check it out.
Let's talk about the why you're here in Portland, and that will sort of lead us to ag gag.
Sure. So I'm here in Portland this weekend for the Animal Law Conference at Lewis and Clark Law School, and I was giving the keynote address the other night to start off the conference and talking about new legislation that makes it illegal to photograph and investigate factory farms and slaughterhouses.
And when we talk about animal law, it does seem like there is so little known about law and what kind of rights do animals have. Can you speak about what you discovered throughout your work and your, you know, you wrote extensively about the kind of protections and rights that animals have during their life? Talk about it.
Well, I think this is one of the most rapidly growing fields of study in the profession right now in law. And I think a lot of that is due to the fact that there aren't significant safeguards in place for animals and protections against cruelty. I mean, we know about laws against harming cats and dogs, but I think most people would be really shocked to learn that there's not one single law that protects animals on farms during their lives. And on top of that, you know, there are some state laws that have different restrictions, but those are defined by the agriculture industry themselves. So whatever they define as, quote, customary practices are completely acceptable. And then you have some federal laws that make it that regulate the transport of animals to slaughter, but even those specifically exempt poultry, which are about 90% of animals killed. So as a result, you have this massive, massive industry that has really no accountability, no safeguards, no oversight, and they're trying to keep it that way. And I think that's just one component of animal law that was really being talked about a lot this weekend. And there was also a lot of discussion of how it intersects with other fields. I mean, it's not just about evaluating this ethical and legal framework for animals. It's about how it relates to workers, to the environment, to public health, to international issues. I mean, it really connects to so many different things.
And such a big part of it is targeting activists who bring attention to what is going on the slaughterhouses. So maybe you also want to talk about the criminalizing activism and labeling activists as terrorists, which you wrote quite a good deal about.
And that's certainly been the focus of my work. And I think it helps, you know, by putting it in that context of how much interest there is in these issues and just the public dialogue that's taking place right now about animal welfare and the environment. It seems like everyone is talking about these things, food, all of these issues. And meanwhile, the industry really has a coordinated campaign to criminalize those who are speaking out against it. And in my work, you know, for years and years now, it has been focused on a diversity of tactics that are being used against protesters. You know, for a long time, that was against people who are breaking windows or setting buildings on fire with the Earth Liberation Front and Animal Liberation Front. But today, the biggest source of attacks on activists are for things like filming undercover investigations, completely nonviolent, lawful, working with national nonprofit organizations, and that's being labeled as terrorism. So this has been kind of the evolution that we've seen over the last 30 years and certainly in the, you know, more than a decade since September 11th.
Let's talk about the actual laws that make it possible. I looked into American Legislative Exchange Council and its influence over legislators, over legislation, over the bills that are introduced, the model legislation that is crafted, then handed out to state legislators and brought back and pushed through. And of course, we're talking about ag gag laws that have been introduced throughout the country in so many states, specifically in states where industry, the meat industry, the dairy industry are the predominant industry.
So for the listeners who aren't familiar, ag gag is referring to a series of laws across the country that specifically make it illegal to document and expose what happens on factory farms, slaughterhouses, and any other, quote, animal enterprises. And these are really a response to undercover video investigations by groups like the Humane Society. And those videos have led to meat recalls, criminal prosecutions, and I think most importantly, a change in the national dialogue of animal welfare, animal cruelty, food, all of these issues. And so in response, rather than trying to adjust their business practices and accommodate consumer outrage, the industry is just trying to shut down the whistleblowers and the journalists and the undercover activists. And this legislation has passed in 7 states. It's been proposed in more than 20 in the last few years. And the laws are evolving. They're not all specifically about banning photography. Some of them are about making people turn over video footage to police rather than to the press. There are all these different versions, but I'm involved and focus so much of my work on this as a journalist because it's specifically criminalizing journalism. There are no exemptions for reporters. I mean, there's a long history in this country of investigative journalists using undercover tactics and relying on undercover sources, and these laws target them. So I'm part of 2 lawsuits challenging them as unconstitutional right now in Utah and in Idaho. And in Idaho, it's looking very promising. There are 16 different journalism groups that have signed on in support. And in addition to the AFL-CIO and whistleblowers groups, the ACLU. So I think things are moving in the right direction, but there's a lack of awareness. And I think it really speaks to that corporate influence that you were talking about. You know, focusing on this issue and how journalism and photography is being criminalized. And I've been documenting that, but I've also wanted to think of creative ways to continue doing my work. And so I decided to launch a Kickstarter campaign to raise some money to buy a drone. And of course, I don't mean the types of drones that the U.S. military uses to murder people around the world. I use the word very loosely to essentially talk about fancy remote-controlled helicopters and quadcopters and airplanes that have high-resolution cameras. And I'm able to, with the drones that I've purchased, I'm beginning to investigate factory farms and take photographs from the air to describe how these massive industries are altering our natural landscape, the environmental pollution. I think these are facilities that are so often want to be hidden from public view. And I hope with this project, I can not only document some of that environmental pollution and the changes to our communities and our landscape, but also, you know, instill this debate about as the government seems to have unfettered access to our personal information and they can spy on us and corporations are spying on us. Why can't we turn the tables and try to use some of that same technology to investigate these industries? And I should be really clear, you know, I'm very opposed to that type of technology being used against the people. But I think it's really important to switch that around and use those tools to speak truth to power and to fight back against the criminalization of those photography.
And as I was following the progress on Kickstarter and I had my fingers crossed, I was wondering, what kind of responses did you get? I mean, I imagine that you got a lot of positive responses and support. What about criticism? Have you came across any critical or openly negative attitude toward your project? And why do you think it would cause such a response?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the most immediately negative was from the agriculture industry itself. I mean, before I had even purchased any equipment, they were just completely freaking out about this. I mean, one industry publication compared my flying a drone to the Death Star from Star Wars, and others were promising how they're going to shoot it out of the sky with shotguns. And I think that was really telling. I mean, the fact that the agriculture industry is freaking out so much before I had even done anything really makes me as a journalist want to do it even more and to find out what they're so desperate to hide. As far as the general public, though, I mean, I've just been overwhelmed by the amount of support from people. The Kickstarter was fully funded in 3 days. I radically expanded the project and talked to a bunch of people through TED and different photojournalists that I work with for advice, like, how can we do this better? And, you know, ambitiously expanded the goal, and then we met that one as well. And people have just been so supportive. And these are not, I should say, I mean, they're not activists per se. I mean, the people that were supporting this project were chipping in everywhere from $1 or $5 to a couple hundred dollars. And it's not because they're, you know, radical activists or vegans or vegetarians even. I mean, these are people that just want to know what's happening on these farms. And that was really inspiring to me. I mean, and we also got just unbelievable media coverage in like National Geographic and Fast Company and all these places. And I think it's really promising.
Once again, I was going to add that it's really telling that the most of the support came from people, because people do want to know what they eat, what goes in.
Well, and I think it says so much about these issues. I mean, it's easy, especially if you're familiar with what happens on factory farms and the environmental impact, how it affects workers, to just, it's such an overwhelming problem. I mean, it's so massive, but it's a nice reminder that people care. I mean, people want to know. And when they do know, they want to bring their actions in line with their values. I mean, I think we all want to think of ourselves as compassionate people and people that care about the earth and other people and workers and in our health. And so when we're exposed to information, I think most people want that so they can do something. And that really speaks to the power of this kind of photography and these investigations. And I think in addition to that, it's a great exercise just to push the limits of the law, to reach out to other journalists, to think critically about these laws and about this technology and how it can be used. And, you know, hopefully, if nothing else, I think there's a very good chance of getting some wonderful images and video. But if nothing else, I mean, it creates that discussion too, which is vital right now.
Thank you.
That was Will Potter, independent journalist, TED Fellow, and author of Green is the New Red, speaking with KBOO's own Yana Maximova about ag gag and animal laws. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next on the Incomparable Radio Zine, host Per Fagering will speak with Valerie Plame. That's right, the former CIA covert operative whose cover was exposed, blown even, by members of the Bush administration. I'll be speaking about her life and the new thriller, Burned, co-authored by Ms. Plame. Thank you, KBOO members, for your support for community radio. Those of you who missed our recent membership drive can still become members of the KBOO Foundation. You go to kboo.fm and you click where it says Donate Today. It's a little cartoon jar. It's in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage. You'll love it. It's a way of life. And now, this.
I'm out to sing songs that'll prove to you that this is your world, and that if it's hit you pretty hard and knocked you down for a dozen loops, no matter how hard it's run you down and rolled over you, no matter what color, what size you are, how you're built, I am out to sing the songs that'll make you take pride in yourself.
I'm Lori Sonnenfeld.
And I'm Don Jacobson.
Together we bring you Moving On, Fridays from 12 noon to 1:30.
We feature both traditional and contemporary folk music.
We love to present live in-studio concerts from local and national musicians.
Tune in and you'll hear music that is socially progressive, moving, and heartfelt.
Music heard only on the left-hand edge of the dial and only on KBOO.
Every Friday, noon to 1:30.
We who believe in freedom cannot
Thank you to Miles and the boys for giving us a bit of some swinging sounds for a rainy Friday morning. I promised you Per Fargren speaking with Valerie Plame, and you know that the boo will always come through for you. So let us begin right now. It's 11:30 a.m. on KBOO Portland, your community radio.
Hi, my guest today is Valerie Plame, who a lot of cable listeners with memories will remember that she was outed by a very vindictive Bush administration back in the run-up to the Iraq War. She was working for the CIA. She was a CIA officer dealing with weapons dealers and nuclear proliferation issues, which pretty important stuff. Anyway, Valerie Plame, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we'd love to. It's nice that you're in town and everything. Tell us a little bit about how you got outed. Now, it was for nothing that you did.
No. What happened, there's the run-up to it, but I think I'll get right to the moment of when I was outed. My husband, retired Ambassador Joe Wilson, had written an op-ed piece for the New York Times in July 2003 entitled, What I Did Not Find in Africa. And in it, he went after the primary rationale that the Bush administration had given us, the American people, for the war in Iraq, which was an imminent nuclear danger from the Saddam Hussein regime.